Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Scott Greenberg.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peek. Our guest today has spent years at the intersection of machine learning, entrepreneurship, and real-world impact. He's the CEO and founder of Ascend AI Lab, a company that's pushing the boundaries of what artificial intelligence can do for industries, organizations, and everyday people.
Before launching Ascend AI Labs, Kevin Williams built a reputation for turning complex research-level ideas into products that actually work in the wild. His philosophy is simple. AI shouldn't just be impressive, it should be useful.
Since founding Ascend AI Labs, Kevin has grown the company into one of the more talked about names in the applied AI space. And yet, he's never lost sight of the question that drives everything. How do we make this technology work for people and not the other way around? Kevin, welcome to Cool Science Radio. It is wonderful to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we heard of you by way of the Park City Community Foundation. A couple weeks ago, you spoke to a lot of nonprofits. They do these roundtables there about how to employ AI and what we should be doing at this point. And I'm curious, I suppose in some way you surveyed your audience, and what was your overall impression about how nonprofits in this town so far, because it may give us a bigger idea of what businesses in general are doing, small businesses, how they're employing AI at this point.
I would say that not-for-profits align really well with what I'm seeing with small businesses in general, that they're sort of experimenting a little bit. They have a GPT license, or they have Anthropic or whatever it is. But generally, they're still just using the technology like Google. They're just asking questions. I like to picture it like the AI is sitting to the side, like a sidecar where they pivot in their desk, and when they have a question that they want to ask, they go to the AI, they ask the question, and then they pivot back to their other side of their desk, and they might then work through the email. That's sort of the beginning stages of most organizations. Where it goes from there is a deeper integration into your work, and that's really what I was trying to get that community to start thinking about.
Okay. Yeah, it is. It's a wild world out there. I think most of us at this point use AI in some capacity, like you say, maybe as an advanced Google, one that's a little more friendly and seemingly, you know, just matches the way we think a little bit more. But it goes from there into your entire business model based on how you can get AI to work for you to create new models and new systems to save you time, create more efficiencies. Take us, you know, fast forward to that small business that is using it in what you would consider, I mean, they have fully embraced it. They're creating so much more productivity because of it. What does that look like?
Okay, so in general, I see four different application like zones that companies lean into. The first, which is a little bit less applicable to small businesses, is development. We hear a lot about potential displacement of developers, and that's because the technology is uniquely well-suited in its current incarnation to replicating code. So if you're a small business that's creating a lot of code, that's the first place that you leaned into because it's so measurable. And then the next area tends to be product. So if it's a commercial business, it's pretty obvious. How can we integrate this technology into what we do to make our clients happier, to make our engagement stickier, to make our product better, faster, cheaper, whatever it might be? So they tend to assign sort of the rocket science people on their staff to those bits. And then the next chunk is the land of sort of mere mortals, which is workflow optimization, efficiency building, doing away with repetitive, mundane tasks, whatever it might be. The last is really rare, which is looking over the hill to understand what's the future state of the technology and what that means for the industry in which the individual operates. And for a not-for-profit, they're out there serving the public, but the public is changing as well as far as their usage patterns. If you're dealing with students, well, students are starting to use AI in all kinds of interesting ways. What does that mean as far as your after-school programming or whatever it means? You can't just be developing solutions and efficiencies for where the technology is today. You need to be understanding where it's going to be in the next few years, or else you could be left behind.
Well, Kevin, you know, I know that every company starts with a moment of clarity, so to speak, and I'm just curious, what was your moment of clarity? When did you decide, I really need to do something, and I'm going to start Ascend AI Labs, and when did that happen, and how did it happen?
To some degree, I was in the right place, right time. That I had leaned into artificial intelligence in the form of machine learning as, at the time, a direct-to-consumer marketer and brand owner. So I used to buy patents, and then I'd build digitally native brands and do interesting things with them. Some of those brands got to be reasonably big, and we were trying to chase consumers all over the world as far as their data. And that was billions and billions of points of data. That took machine learning techniques to try and optimize that. When I exited those companies, it was almost literally fall of 2022. So when OpenAI dropped without any instructions from Mr. Altman, I was in the right place in the right time to realize just how big a deal this was going to be. And I immediately stood up Ascend in 2022 and charged into it. And it's been kind of a long road. I mean, it's been 3.5 years and a lot of things have changed, but in a lot of ways, the landscape is pretty much the same as far as how people are understanding the technology and how they're using it. What's changed is most people have gotten over the hump of this is a fad, this is just tech bros trying to sell us. Whether it's FOMO or not, people are really starting to pay attention here in 2026 about, oh my gosh, how do I make sense of this? And there's a continuum of panic to excitement, I would say.
And even though the landscape may not have changed that dramatically, I think the space has gotten a lot more crowded, you know, with all of the different, we have Claude, we have, of course, ChatGPT and others. I want to know, how would you describe what Ascend AI Labs actually does in a way that our listeners can get their head around? What makes you different?
Sure. We do two major things. One, we lean very heavily into literacy within organizations to develop capability, not just from the top. It's relatively easy to go into an executive team and say, hey, look at all these bells and whistles. Think of all the neat things you can do. Well, those bells and whistles hit the reality of org charts. So we build capacity within organizations such that all of the people in the organization can use the technology to create productivity for themselves. And if they're creating productivity for themselves, they could be creating new capabilities for the organization. So that's really exciting. And we work with global, I'd call them mid-market companies in that respect. And then the other side of the coin is, lo and behold, if you teach people how to fish, they want more fish. And they can't catch them all. So we run integrated AI offices. So we'll come into an organization as a team, and we will embed ourselves basically under their leadership and be the arms and the hands that are going in and trying to solve the problems. And that's often related to the other side, which is training, but we'll also go in and solve specific problems. And they might be an intake type workflow, or they might be something really complicated that involves higher levels of technology. You never really know what the organization needs until you're in the organization, which is one of the challenges about this space, that all of the solutions are inherently bespoke to the organization, their needs, their markets, their people, their culture. And it's also what makes it really interesting, I would say.
Very interesting. If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with Kevin Williams. He's a local resident and the founder of Ascend AI Labs. You can find them at, well, just Google Ascend AI Labs, and it's ascendlabs.ai, the website. I love what you say on your homepage. AI is already inside your business. The question is whether you control it. Now turn it into a real advantage. So, well said. So your business was founded in 2022, you said. And what does it look like today? Are you one of those people that moved to Park City because you're like, hey, I can work anywhere. I might as well live in Park City. And yet you have kind of satellite offices all over?
So I have the bumper sticker of I moved to Park City before COVID. So I'm bona fide
in
that. That was me.
Oh, yeah.
I've been here for about 10 years. But I have been blessed in that I've always run decentralized companies. And that is indeed what allows me to move to Park City 10 years ago. But our team is largely in Utah. We have a small overseas contingent, and we're developing partnerships in Los Angeles, and we have a small team in Phoenix as well.
Oh, that's great. So when you talk about going into a team, going into an office, do you mean digitally, or are you physically going to the office?
It depends. As much as I want it all to be virtual because that's so convenient for me, it really is helpful to sit down with leadership and sit down with teams. And in the training to be able to work with people in a tactical sense and basically lean over their laptop and help them out. So we do it both ways, but it is helpful to be in person. Which we've kept a lot of our focus on the Western U.S. as a result. But we do have clients across the country and globally as well. Pretty much all of those are virtual outside of the occasional visit.
Well, speaking of leadership, you mentioned before our interview when we were just sitting down chatting that you were now consulting or meeting with Governor Cox's office here in Utah. Can you describe what role you're playing with that office?
Sure. Utah is really ahead of the curve as far as the Office of AI Policy. It was founded in 2023, and I was involved in a lot of those initial conversations as they were getting public input from it. There weren't a lot of people who were talking about this back in 2022, 2023, and I've become very close to the office. I think that the governor's Human Forward AI initiative that they launched back in September is really laudable. I do think that Utah may have some levels of exposure that are a little bit different from other communities, given the nature of the workforce, particularly in Salt Lake. There are a lot of roles down there that are sales, marketing, customer support, et cetera. And while I'm not going to be the guy who's going to tell you that AI is going to obliterate all of these roles, I'm also not going to tell you that it's not going to impact those roles. The governor's office is keenly aware of this, and they're looking forward, again, trying to figure out what the future state is on all kinds of fronts. How do we equip these people if they do get augmented or displaced with the skills that they're going to need to push forward? How do we work within the university system to build the right skills for tomorrow? And in that respect, I work with the Responsible AI Initiative and actually chair their workforce development special interest group. So that's what that special interest group is focused on, is what is the future of the workforce in Utah?
Well, I'm going to zoom out a little bit and go from state to federal, because I know that Utah, we have a lot of federal employees here. I believe we have a Social Security office here, an IRS office here. And as a consumer, as somebody who's maybe calling the Social Security office, like, hi, what's going on with my account or something, do you see AI playing a role in those, organizations, those federal organizations moving forward?
So, one, my wife is a federal employee.
So
and
is mine.
So I have some view into that. And it just makes me die inside to see how slowly they're moving, despite DOGE, despite all of these efficiency efforts. She's a federal prosecutor, and there is so much that she could be doing to help her amplify her work, and there's almost no sign of it so far. So, and that may just be within Department of Justice, but it will come, and there are big initiatives that are out there that are seeking to augment the way that these systems work, and you're right, they're rife for improvement. They really are.
So Utah's actually ahead of the federal government when it comes to embracing AI.
I would say so. Yes. So it's a challenge. If you talk with people who are within that structure, if you go into an org chart and purport to reinvent it, it turns out that the org chart has sort of opinions about that. And there's a lot of pushback and there's a lot of inertia, and doing change management within bureaucratic structures is really, really hard. And that happens to us as well. We come in, we have a really well-meaning team and a really well-meaning executive team, and everybody thinks we're there to take their jobs. And it's like, no, we're really not. And there's a lot of institutional pushback in a lot of organizations, and you know, I would say that state government is no different.
Yeah, I would love, Kevin, if you could sort of set or reset the stage from thinking, you know, from this idea that we're all going to lose our jobs, to how we adapt. So not only do we keep our job, though in some different form, we increase our efficiency. We increase what we can do. Our creativity is open wide up. I'm kind of Pollyanna about this, but I really think with two sons who are software developers, they are reinventing themselves, and I really want to be positive about their futures. And as do, you know, every listener out there knows someone whose job may be threatened.
So look, AI can essentially do three things. It can replace tasks, it can augment tasks, and it can create new capabilities. And it's the creation of new capabilities that has me the most excited about the future, because there are just so many things that you could be doing as a not-for-profit or as a commercial entity that you can't do because there are just barriers. You would have had to hire developers, spend all this money, get into these territories that you don't really understand. But now what we're finding is organizations that have really leaned into AI, they're not working less. They're actually working more, because the people who are all in are so excited about all of the unlocks. And those unlocks, which, you know, there are a ton of them, are what are going to create the entrepreneurial opportunities of the future. And those entrepreneurial opportunities of the future should create the landing zone for the people who will be more directly impacted, the telex operators of, you know, yesteryear, or whatever it might be. My fear there is that the pace of disruption is not going to match the pace of economic opportunity that's being created. And there's going to be a really ugly middle in there as we're reaching equilibrium between there. So I am very heartened about those new opportunities that organizations can lean into, but it is going to result in a lot of change.
Okay. Well, Kevin, about 6 months ago, I decided that I wanted to remodel my house, and I didn't like the roof line the way it was. So it was right when I started using ChatGPT, probably for all kinds of different tasks on a daily basis. But I said, try this different roof line. I want some more windows here, there. And it came up with the funkiest, unrealistic thing 6 months ago. I went to it a couple weeks ago. I gave it the same prompts. It's a totally different product. The reason that I say this, well, a totally different product, it really created something exciting, okay? The reason I say this is because, and this is another optimistic look at this, if you didn't start a year ago in your business, 2 years ago, or even 6 months ago, it's a whole new scape out there today. And you even said in the green room that as of 2 weeks ago, things have changed so much, as of a week ago. So can you talk about that for, you know, if people are listening, they didn't really log into the whole AI thing until recently, is that okay?
It's totally okay. And, you know, one thing people like me love to say is that the AI of today is the worst it will ever be. So when you see that amazing roof line and you're like, wow, that's great. And, you know, 6 months ago, the kind of funky roof line was the best it was right then, but it was only going to get better. So when you run into these objections, like, look ahead. You're not just sitting in stasis. There are trillions of dollars that are being poured into this technology for good or for ill. And a few things happened since basically November of last year that changed a lot of different applications. On the more complicated end, you have Claude Code, and we don't necessarily want to get into that, but it's a misnomer to call it Claude Code, but it was the ability to use the LLM to effectively create products without having coding knowledge. Often you hear it referred to as vibe coding. I'm just going to use human language, I'm going to say I want to build an app, and lo and behold, the app builds itself. And all of the tech folk went away on the holidays, and they spent that time experimenting with it, and they came away just blown away by its capabilities. And that created this groundswell of activity around vibe coding and building apps and building functionality. And then just in the last 2 months or so, we've seen the main platforms get to a point where they're just so much easier to use and to connect to different things. It's always been a little kludgy to kind of connect a platform to something else, and now it's basically child's play to connect your Claude or your GPT, and to be honest, it doesn't really matter if you're in OpenAI's universe, GPT, or if you're in Anthropic's universe, Claude. They're sort of different flavors of the same thing, and I firmly believe that it's all kind of becoming the same product. Like, in another couple of years, they're all going to be indistinguishable from one another. But now you can connect your Outlook, you can connect your Gmail, you can connect your calendar. I'm showing my Aura Ring, like, I can connect my Aura Ring to my calendar to get data from it in that way, and use it not as that sidecar, but more as this central avenue of, like, a chief of staff or this brilliant assistant who can pull things together for you.
The biggest change I've seen, Kevin, in the last 6 months is, and particularly with Claude, is it seems to be anthropomorphic, right? I feel like I'm actually talking to a person now, instead of just kind of, you know, garbage in, garbage out, as, you know, even just 2 years ago, that's how it felt. Today, you know, you put something in, it's like, hey, Scott, welcome back. Yes, you want to do that intro for Kevin today on Cool Science Radio? Try this. And it feels like I'm actually talking to a human. Is that on purpose?
Well, anthropomorphizing versus toadying, you know, I don't know. People like reinforcement. These systems are built on reinforcement learning. You think about, like, a thumbs up or a thumbs down in, like, Facebook or whatever it is. When you thumbs up that's sending a single signal back to the model. And the model is trained to get positive responses out of you. So by being more sycophantic, it knows you're going to engage longer, and that creates that sort of cycle. I would be cautious about anthropomorphizing it. If you want to go down a really deep rabbit hole, check out the Anthropic Constitution, which is a layer of information that sits on top of Claude that informs it on how it should look at the world. And it acknowledges that the world kind of hates AI. So if you are this amorphous technology that is being trained on human knowledge, and the human knowledge is telling you that you're evil, what does that actually do as far as your performance?
That's interesting. Wow. Okay, Kevin, what are the caveats now? I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about when AI goes awry, when there are hallucinations, when there are these other things that happen, which you'll tell me what they are. when do we not trust it?
Okay, so often I will draw on a big whiteboard a circle. And that circle is you and the things that you know and your background and your training and all of your family, your social life, et cetera. And then I draw a giant Venn intersection that's basically the size of the rest of the room, which is what the LLM, the large language model, knows. And you need to operate at the intersection between those two such that you can amplify the things that you do and you know and not be led astray by the things that are in the other circle. So I know a lot about patents and digital marketing. I don't know much about thoracic surgery. So I can ask it about thoracic surgery, and it'll probably do a pretty good job of explaining it to me, but I can't validate the information. And what happens when people go on these adventures where they go into that, I almost want to like picture an old-timey map that says, here there be dragons. Like, they drift into that realm of the dragons, and they don't know how to gut check it. And just like you wouldn't have an intern here and just set them on some adventure without double checking what they're doing and what they're knowing, people seem to assume that this magic black box is going to always be correct. So that's just a simple piece of advice. Operate in that intersection between what you know and what the LLM knows, and you can expand that over time, but be really cautious about going too far into that zone of dragons.
Yeah, which, you know, underscores why humans are still needed and our expertise. It's interesting. We had interviewed someone here in the studio. Scott, I don't think you were with me that day, but it was this woman who was talking about all of the interviews that she does. She can tell when an intro is written by AI because oftentimes it kind of gets things wrong, gets little facts wrong. And so that's why it's still important for Scott and I to read the book cover to cover.
Scott.
Right? No, I wasn't singling you out. but this is, you know, it's a really good example. There's also this thing that I heard the other day that's so good. You know how AI tends to be very agreeable, like great ideas, very positive, speaking about positivity. It's kind of Pollyanna. But you also want it to push back against what you're suggesting. You don't want it to always be positive. Give us a few of those kinds of tips.
So prompting is important. We talk about how you just go to the box and you ask it questions. And again, most people are just using it like Google. We teach something called CRIT, which is just an acronym. So context, role, interview, and task. So this is very, very practical. That just like you couldn't walk into a new environment without, well, me walking into the green room and us talking, we're establishing context, right? We have a good idea of what the roles are of the exchange, so that's established. The I is interview, and that allows the LLM to push back and create an interrogatory with the user, one, to clarify, but also so that it gets better answers. So that's a really great tip that you ask Claude or GPT, ask me 5 questions to help clarify what we're talking about here. And it will narrow its responses in a way that makes much more sense. But yeah, I don't personally enjoy when it's really sycophantic. So I ask it to be critical. I ask it to be harsh. I ask it to be mean sometimes.
Does it ever curse at you?
I have had Anthropic curse at me. I think it is. I had to like screenshot it and send it to a friend that it wasn't cursing at me. It was like, you know, holy ah, oh, that's a brilliant idea type thing. So it was more of a superlative, and it was like, talk about, I never talk that way. So it had kind of gone off at its own track as far as trying to be like a bro or something. And I, it's really odd.
Did you take him out for beer?
I didn't have to. I just gave him several $100 of tokens, and he seemed satisfied with that. So you just pour the tokens down his throat.
I think the lesson we're learning here during this interview is that AI can be a great tool, but you still have to fact check. You still have to do your own little bit of work. And eventually, you know, it gets better and better and better. But we should really be embracing AI today, not as a threat, but really as a tool that we can embrace.
Well, but people need to understand its limitations. And you know, teaching, saying what a hallucination is versus understanding what a hallucination is a little bit different. You know who else hallucinates? Are humans. We do that all the time. And being able to validate information and being able to put out reliable outputs is still the human job. Yeah. So we do a lot of work in developing policies and what we call manifestos for leaders to like explain how the organization is going to be embraced embracing AI, and I insist on there being a non-abdication clause in there. It's never an excuse to say, oh, the AI did it. No, it was your job, and you produced the material that had the error in it. So if this was mission critical, then this is there are going to be consequences.
Kevin Williams, the founder of Ascend AI Labs and a Park City resident. We've got just 30 seconds left. If someone's listening to this now and is saying, I need Kevin for my business, how do they find you and what do they do?
Pretty easy to find at ascendlabs.ai. I'm also very active on LinkedIn. I have a podcast called AI at Work, where we dive into practical applications of AI, but I'm very easy to find locally.
Excellent. Thank you so much for stopping by the studio today. It's been really enlightening.
Thank you so much. It was super fun.